Hi, everybody. Dennis Prager with Fireside Chat number 290. And if you haven't seen the previous 289, I strongly recommend that you make a start. A lot of very important stuff is said here, which is a perfect, I can't believe it, perfect segue to my topic. Mm-hmm. That I just said about something I do, a lot of important stuff said here. So that was theoretically a self-compliment.
Right.
So that's perfect, because that's what I wanted to open up about and then take your questions about anything in life. Can you say that, can you think that? Or does it make you conceited? And can you say that? Or does that make you a braggart? Right? So there are two separate subjects here. Can you think it? And can you say it? I have thought about this subject much of my life. What should you think about yourself? It's a big topic. So very early on, in the 1970s, the idea arose that it's really important to have self-esteem. The whole self-esteem movement started, and though I have always believed that you should acknowledge what you're good at, that is not in any way necessarily arrogant or bragging or unhumble or immodest. At the same time, I knew from the outset, and I wrote about it in the 1970s, that it was a truly foolish and probably destructive movement, the self-esteem movement, because you have to earn self-esteem. Not only that, but as I always tell people who ask me, well, Dennis, we're having a kid soon. What's your advice on raising a child? And I've had the same answer for decades. Make sure that you communicate to your child that self-control is infinitely more important than self-esteem. So that's a very important point. So self-esteem is not the same as self-respect. I think we should all aim for self-respect. So let me begin with myself, which may be already not humble, but I know me and you know me. And since the only person that you and I know, that you and I both know is me, it's probably worthwhile to use me. So I speak well. I write well. Is that arrogant? I would argue this. If I said to somebody, who said to me, you know, you gave a good speech or you speak well, oh, please, that's very sweet of you, but that's not true. That would be fake. So it's a very important subject. How should one regard oneself? And my answer is, I have many answers, actually. One is realistically. What you do well, you should know that you do well. And be honest with yourself and don't deny it, because the very fact that you do it means you believe you do it well. Let me ask you this. Would you like to have an airplane pilot on your next flight who thought, you know, I'm really not that good at this? I'm not sure why they put me in this in the flight deck here. Or I really know what I'm doing. Right? Even frankly, if it bordered a little bit on the arrogant, I would prefer that to the super humble, I don't know. I'm really lucky that I'm in the cockpit. People fool themselves, or they believe cliches like, well, that's the sin of pride. There is a sin of pride, but that's not the sin of pride. The sin of pride is not knowing what you're good at. It's over-assessing yourself may be the sin of pride and immodesty and lack of humility and the like. That's true. Where you think you're great and you're not so great and you're not great at all. Okay, so the issue is to be realistic about yourself. I know what I'm not good at, believe me. There's a lot of stuff I'm not good at. And I stay away from that in terms of public work or writing about it. I have written very, very little in my life about economics. I know economics, but I don't know economics nearly as well as I know social, moral, cultural thought and the like, or for that matter, Soviet history. I know Soviet history a lot better than I can explain the Federal Reserve. So I've never explained the Federal Reserve. Others do it better than I do. So the number one thing is have a realistic view. That means you have to know what you're good at, just as important as to know what you're not good at. You need to be realistic about you, just as you're realistic about others. You don't inflate most other people's abilities, and you don't deflate their abilities. You should have that ability for yourself. Number two. If you are exceptionally good at something, you should never think that makes you a better human being than the next guy. Now, you might be a better human being than the next guy. If you lead a responsible life ethically and morally and the next guy doesn't, you're allowed to think, to the best of my knowledge, God will judge us, but to the best of my knowledge, I think I've led a better life than this person who has done nothing for anybody, doesn't take care of his family, et cetera, et cetera. So generally, though, if you're good at something, you don't walk around advertising that fact in the way you behave towards others. So I have always said, I mean, as long as I have been speaking, I have said, how do you know the character of somebody quickly? I always gave the example of you're out on a date. Watch how the guy or the girl that you're out on a date with treats the waiter. Not treats you. Anybody on a date is going to treat you well because they want you to like them. But how does the person treat someone from whom they don't need anything? I know my dad taught me, and I have lived by it. Every day that I walk into my radio studio, I make certain to say hello to the guy who's in charge of getting the garbage collected in the area around the building. So there are two big things. Be realistic about yourself, pro and con. What are you not particularly good at, and what are you particularly good at? Those are very important things for you to ably assess. And the other is you don't treat anybody as less than you just because they haven't achieved, let's say, professionally as much as you have. There's a line in the Bible which is fascinating. And it says in the first five books, the books known as the five books of Moses, because the traditional view is that Moses is the author. And Moses was the most humble man in the world, which always cracked me up when I first learned it as a kid. How could Moses, if he's the author, say he's the most humble man in the world? That is not exactly a humble thing to do. Maybe there's a lesson there, though. Maybe the humble can know they're humble, just like the able can know they're able. I remember my father, I'll never forget this. This was etched, it's etched in my mind. After one of my speeches where my parents attended, I always introduced my parents and I wanted them to get some glory and you know, and applauded. And they were always very moved. And it moved me that they were moved. Anyway, after a speech, I saw some people gathered around my father. And he did not know I was in the vicinity. There was no way he would know. I think his back was toward me, in fact. So I overheard someone go over to him and say, Max Prager, or Mr. Prager, I guess Mr. Prager, I don't know if they would have known his first name. You must have been some great father to produce a son like Dennis. And my father looked at the guy and said, sir, I was very lucky. And now, the interesting thing is, my dad was not known as particularly humble. That's the irony. But that was a very humble statement to make. And by the way, when I'm praised for my kids, that's my answer. Thank you, and I'm very lucky. Now, of course, I tried to raise good kids. Of course I did. But you know how many parents try to raise good kids and the kids don't turn out particularly good? There's a lot of luck in life. And that's just the way it is. Did I ever do an opening on luck?
You've talked about it a lot.
Yeah, because I don't know how people can deny its existence. People don't want to believe that because it's painful. But it's a separate issue. It doesn't matter whether you do or don't. There's a lot of luck in who your parents are, and there's a lot of luck in who your children are. that's the way of life. So it's quite all right to know that you have done well or do well in a certain area, as long as it doesn't go to your head. And one final word about going to your head. So I get this line very often. I'm frequently stopped at restaurants or airports. People say very kind things to me, total strangers. And I always say, would you like a selfie? And usually the answer is yes. And often people will say, in men at least as much as women, which really moves me, just want you to know, we love you. You know, if it's a couple or a family or two friends or even a guy alone, you know, I really love you. And I get that a lot on the radio from men. And then in person, not on the radio, the person will often add, well, I know you hear that all the time. And my answer has been, well, actually, that's not all I hear. Look up my name and any pejorative like a-hole, and you'll get hundreds of thousands of hits. So I am attacked a lot and I am praised a lot. So here is a very good thing I came up with a long time ago. If you let the compliments go to your head, you will let the insults go to your heart. If you don't let the compliments go to your head, the insults won't go to your heart. They're sort of related. Not sort of, they're quite related. So that's been my view. I don't let the compliments go to my head. I appreciate them. I think it's a beautiful thing when people say something kind to me. And on the other side, when I'm attacked for all sorts of reasons, then I just say that is part of being a public figure. And that's it. I don't lose sleep over the attacks. The only attack that ever bothers me is when I'm misquoted. Then I have to say I get angry. But that's not because I'm insulted. It's because somebody has lied about me. Okay, so be realistic about yourself. So Father's Day is coming up, and I got a great Father's Day gift for the father in your life, and that is great cigars. Now, you might say, well, what if the father in my life doesn't smoke cigars? And the answer then is, ignore what I'm about to say. This does not apply to you. Because most people don't want to get a gift that they don't use. On the other hand, a lot of guys do smoke cigars. Or, by the way, if you're okay with this, and you know a younger person, like someone in their 20s, and they may just love it. I never have thought of trying it out. There are a lot worse habits in life than cigars. My dad smoked his last four the day before he died at 96. And I love him. So anyway, I picked three great ones for you to have as a gift. Come in a beautiful presentation package for Father's Day. It's a $150 donation. Just click the link in the description. All right, here we go. Whoops. Okay, there we go. One minute. Okay.
Hey, Mr. Prager, my name's Troy. I'm 34 years old, and I'm from Bloomington, Minnesota. I really started going back to church around 2020 when the lockdowns were happening, mainly because I wanted answers, but a lot of it was due to your influence. So God bless you, and thank you for doing that. There are many family members and friends I have that don't go to church. And one of the big reasons they say it is because they are kind of disgusted by a lot of the cover-ups, whether it's the sexual cover-ups or just the corruption of the church at times. And I was wondering, what's your best response to somebody when they say that? God bless you and thank you for everything you've done for our country.
You sound like an impressive guy, Troy. My dad, isn't it interesting that I still quote my dad? The stuff that a parent implants in your mind sort of lasts your whole life. When either of my sons quotes me to me, I'm so moved. Sometimes I don't even remember having said it. But my father, who was an Orthodox Jew, religious Jew, often would say, and I know exactly where he would say it, because we had the, as in most homes that have a Shabbat, a Sabbath, so it's Friday night is the big meal, then Saturday afternoon is another one. But the Friday night is the biggest, and it's typically three hours. The ones I have now with friends are 4 hours. So a lot of good talk took place. I've often said, I think I learned to think clearly at the Shabbat table. So my father, when he would talk about religion, would often say, Dennis, never confuse Jews with Judaism. Not a good line. So I would say to you, don't confuse Catholics with Catholicism. Don't confuse Christians with Christianity, because there are a lot of unimpressive people who seem to be religious, but they're failures in the more significant moral sphere. And what was the great line by James? Faith without works is dead. Exactly. It's meaningless. You have the faith, but you don't have the works. And by the way, it doesn't mean you're only perfect. This is another very important warning here. There are a lot of so-called religious people or seemingly religious people who are not good folks. That's a tragedy. That's what my father was referring to. But a lot of people judge religious people unfairly, so that if they find one moral failing in the religious person, completely dismissed. Hypocrite, phony, the religion's useless. That's not fair either. Religious people struggle with their natures just as much, or have to just as much as irreligious people. Struggling with your nature is the only way to become a good person. So I don't expect religious people to be perfect. I expect them to be a little better than the irreligious, or what the hell is the point of being religious? That is my view, whether you're Christian or Jewish, Catholic or Protestant, it doesn't matter. So I don't go to synagogue because the rabbi is terrific. Actually, in my case, I hope the rabbi is terrific because I'm sort of the rabbi of my synagogue. I wasn't ordained as a rabbi, but I have a very similar educational background to a rabbi. And I'm the one who teaches the Torah each week, among others. But I'm the main speaker at a synagogue that I founded with some friends. But And the irony is, I did found one with my friends because we wanted one that was not political. Many synagogues and churches are very politicized these days. And many of the non-politicized, the traditional Catholic or traditional evangelical or Christian Protestant or traditional Jew, Orthodox, a lot of the clergy there, they don't speak relevance. They don't tackle the great issues of life, and so that's a very serious problem, and a lot of them close down their synagogues and churches during the lockdowns just as much as secular institutions did. And that didn't speak well for courage on the part of the clergy. Having said all of that, not having a religious community in your life is a loss. And now, what would you say? You said, what would I say? Was it to my relatives? Is that what he asked? His friends, his relatives, his parents?
Yeah, people in his life.
People in his life, yeah. Say, I choose to be with a religious community, which is a mixed bag. I fully acknowledge even the clergy may be mixed bags, not all terrific people. I agree with you. But I rather be with a mixed group on Sunday than watching football. And that's what it comes down to. And the fact that I have, it was my doing or my speaking that brought you to church. I always tell people who tell me that, Christians or Catholics, and tell me that, just remember to tell people it was a Jew who brought you back to church. Okay. Let's see. Peg in Waco, Texas. I saw this right before we came on, and I was so touched. I think Otto was preparing us for his departure by limiting his on-air appearances. It made his leaving more gradual, as if to allow us to adjust to when he would no longer be here. Dogs are smarter than people give them credit for. He will be sorely missed. Look forward to seeing what dog your wife brings into your family next. I'm looking forward to. If any of you, I'm sorry.
It's funny that she knows Sue without knowing Sue.
She knows Sue without knowing. Yes, that's a great point. Yes, she knows Sue without knowing Sue. Right. I mean, Otto spoiled us. He in looks and in temperament, he was just close to perfect. Anyway, yes, it does seem that way, doesn't it? About 6 months before he started not showing up. I don't think he knew it was his last 6 months, but it's a very touching. Who knows? I won't say he didn't, but it's a very touching comment. Ashley, Knoxville, Tennessee. Hi, Dennis. I am due to deliver my second child in a few weeks. I almost did not survive the delivery of my first child. Wow. As the due date approaches, I find my anxiety increasing and have decided that I should write a goodbye letter to my six-year-old in case I experience similar complications with this delivery. I am unsure what to say in my letter and was hoping you could offer some advice. Thank you for all that you do. Your fireside chats have made me a better wife and mother. And my daughter loves the Craftery as well as your Otto's Tales books. God bless. Well, you really put me on the spot here. What should you say in a goodbye letter to your six-year-old in case you die delivering your second child? Okay. So I would, off the top of my head, I would recommend three things. And if I think more, probably be four things. So I hope I remember the three. The obvious is how much you love him or her, but that's not enough. Another thing I think that is worth putting in that note, which I hope they never read, is what type of person you want them to become. That's really important. Especially in a letter like that. And be as specific as you can. You know, I want you to be a good human being. That's number one. I would like you to get married. I would like you to have children. If you can't, you can't. Or if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. But I want you to know what I dream for you. And that you be an ethical, good person. That's number one. I would also add, don't blame God for my death. That's not something I think you would have thought about including, but I think that's very important. God, if you die in that delivery, God didn't kill you. Nature killed you, and God allows that to happen, but God didn't kill you. God allows these things to happen, and that you believe as well, I guess a fourth thing in light of that, if this is true to you, I don't want you to make up things, but if you do believe in an afterlife, as I do, that you will reconnect one day in some way, that you believe that. I think that's very comforting to anybody who loves anybody. I don't think it's very comforting. I know it's very comforting. So those are four things I would put in that note. How are we doing?
We're at the end.
Do I have an internal clock or do I have an internal clock? Well, that was a dramatic thing to end on.
It was.
Thank you for asking. Thank you for watching, and I'll see you next week.
Thank you for watching this video. To keep PragerU videos free, please consider making a tax-deductible donation.